Good evening, I'm Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida. Welcome to Tuesday Topics. I'd like to begin by thanking Steve Bauer for recording this evening's presentation, as well as acting as our erstwhile editor, turns our ramblings into a wonderfully coherent-sounding ACB radio program, insofar as one can ever sound coherent. I'd also like to thank our producer, Brian Charlson, and all of the folks who've turned up this evening. Obviously, we owe a huge debt to George Bies of Talking Communities, whose software powers Tuesday Topics. Tonight, we have the opportunity to talk with someone who I would consider a good friend of mine, who is a past president of the Florida Council of the Blind and is currently first vice president of the Florida Council of the Blind. But for the most part, we aren't going to be talking with him about the Florida Council of the Blind. Instead, we're going to be talking some about who he is as a person and what he does for a living. He is an entrepreneur, somebody who sells access technology products, and someone who is a person who I call when I want to bounce ideas about access technologies off someone. He's a very bright, very capable, very passionate person, and it's a real pleasure to have Robert Miller as our guest this evening. To begin with, Robert, welcome to Tuesday Topics, and why don't you tell us a little about who you are, and tell us about, have you always been blind, and tell us about some of the other jobs you've done before you ended up being an entrepreneur, an access technology reseller.
Oh, well, that'll take all night. I was born with a visual disability, basically RP. I attended the Florida School for the Blind probably up through the 11th grade. I left and went to public school and skipped the 12th grade and went to college. And probably how I got involved in adaptive technology was, you know, through my experiences trying to make job sites accessible. And I, you know, basically started using technology when I worked with the Sheriff's Department. I've worked many different jobs, worked for a newspaper company in West Virginia, and it was pretty much a not technical job. But I also, in school, I started working in dispatch or radio communications. And as that evolved and went to the computer, I got involved with the VersaBraille, where we interface it with a teletype system. And I always used technology, and then I got interested in it myself. And actually, when I went through college, I didn't use it that much. I got my bachelor's degree and stayed out of school for about 11 years. Then I went back to school, and that's kind of when I got interested in technology. So I started, you know, back with VERT. I used to use a thing called a BD3 embosser that actually printed teletypes out in Braille. It was just one long single strip of paper that I would run over with a chair and rip and try to piece together. But that's kind of how I got into it. Been doing it for about 15 years, and that's pretty much what got my interest.
And when did you decide to sort of jump into it with both feet and start your company?
Well, back then, ADA wasn't all that strong, or it wasn't even in effect at the time. And after I got a degree in criminology, I decided to just buy a computer because I kept getting all these rejection letters from state agencies and, you know, trying to apply the degree, and that didn't work. So I took out a loan. And I bought a computer from, I guess you call it a CRC or a training center here. Back then, they had a no-interest loan. So I basically bought a computer and started tearing apart and sort of getting into it. It was a DOS machine. It was a 386. And I was using VERT and the Accent. And I basically took it apart. I would call technicians and tell them I was a blind guy and I wanted to know how to add memory. You know, built computers, and it's just kind of branched out from there.
So now you run a company called EasyTalk, and EasyTalk has been at some national conventions and, of course, is always there at ACB conventions. Tell us a little bit about what it's like trying to make it as a small businessman. Is it easy to compete with entities like Freedom Scientific and some of the other companies?
Well, for me it has, and you know, I'm mainly a dealer for GW Micro, or actually a distributor, but I was actually also a distributor or a reseller for Freedom for 3 years, and every company is different. I think, you know, one of the main things, if you're a small guy or you have a niche type company, you know, you have to consider your overhead. And we've actually, in the 15 years, grown quite a bit, and, you know, we've done well, and there's been some things that I have seen, you know, over the years where government or technology really makes some changes out there. So, you know, we've dealt with several different companies. We sell the Alva products, Index, GW. Like I said, we dealt with Freedom. Actually, one of the things that really got me moving in the adaptive technology was a thought screen reader called ASAP. I met Larry Skukon, and he kind of really gave me the edge or the push that I needed. And I sold, you know, a lot of his product. And it changes. It changes every 2 or 3 years.
So one of the lessons that I think I'm hearing you suggest is out there is, if you're going to survive as a reseller, you have to be prepared to change the inventory that you carry and to change with the times, and you have to make some guesses about where technology is going to go.
Yeah, I always tell everybody I have the museum of the technology, you know, we call shelfware, but we try a lot. You know, we spent a lot of time and a lot of money looking at all the note takers out there, and, you know, personally, I was almost ready to give up on note takers, and very strong with the BrailleSense now. It's a good product and probably one of the more stable products, you know, that runs Windows CE. You know, we've been through the Elba, the Braille and Speak, the Aria, which was a DOS machine. So quite a, you know, bit of background in that. And I think when you're in that technology, the most important thing is to know the product and to be able to give people the tech support that they need for the product.
I guess that's one of the main advantages to dealing with somebody who is relatively local, huh? Being prepared to deal with somebody who maybe is going to treat you a little bit more personally than, say, one of the big companies is likely to.
Well, see, and I don't know if locally is fair, because we've probably sold in 35 states, and if, you know, a customer has a good relationship with us, why shouldn't they be able to buy the product from us? And, you know, if you want to get into talking about, you know, dealers or reps or whatever, sighted people love to get into the adaptive technology business because there is, you know, a pretty good margin, but they don't provide the level of support. And personally, I think that if a person has found a dealer or a distributor that they feel comfortable with, regardless of what product they buy, if they choose to want to buy it from that person, they should be able to.
Well, you're kind of at the leading edge, if you like, of access technology. What do you see in the future? Are we heading for more of the same, or are there some new kinds of products that you think will appear on the market? Are there some new products that you're just about to start carrying that you think folks would like to know about?
The fun part of being in technology is to look at the new stuff. I think there are going to be some big changes probably in the next 2 or 3 years. We're using GPS on cell phones now. I don't know if y'all have heard about Lodestone, which is a free software that you can download. It's not perfect, but it's pretty good for free. I don't know if you've heard about the Olympus DS50 digital recorder, but it's actually something that you could actually go to Target now, or, you know, any of your electronic stores and buy. It's a very high-quality recorder, and you can put it in a speech mode. So I think we're going to see that a lot more. We're seeing that with the cell phones, and I think we're going to see a lot more in the GPS market. As far as, like, handheld scanners, I'm not real impressed with the Kurzweil reader, but I think that probably other companies will branch off on that, and it will be more affordable and smaller. I think in the next probably 3 or 4 years, you're going to see some pretty cool things. I was talking to someone today And, you know, we're talking about magnification in PDAs. You know, just to have something like the SenseView that actually had a PDA built into it would be an awesome product. And when you look at all the technologies that are out there, if you, you know, can just group those together, there's going to be some pretty exciting things happening, I think.
Another question that I'd like to discuss with you is the role of advocacy in the area of technology. Are there things that blind people ought to be doing in terms of, well, first, access technology? Let's talk about that first. Do you think blind people ought to be putting pressure on access technology makers to do some things that they're not at the moment?
Well, I guess to answer that question, I'd have to ask you a question, you know, in regards to what or you know, particular technology. You know, I think that most of the adaptive technology out there now works pretty strongly with Microsoft, and they're pretty much the king of everything that happens, and they do have guidelines. But, you know, when I look for an accessible product, I look for a company that really listens to what the users want. And any company that doesn't do that, they're losing out, because pretty much your input is free development.
I would take it that means that the folks who make the BrailleSense and GW Micro are pretty interested in input from customers.
Almost certainly. I mean, you know, their beta list or, you know, the beta testing they do is extensive, and it's the best, and it's volunteer help, you know, because you can make a product and it works on one machine, and, you know, one variable could change so much, and still that company has to, you know, work those problems out.
There's a kind of an age-old question that's out there, and I guess I'm going to ask you to put in your 2 cents worth on it. There are two ways to go with access technology. There is the method of developing products specifically for the blind, like, say, Kurzweil, like, say, the Freedom Box, like, say, OpenBook, which are self-voicing, which are entirely independent of screen readers and which function fine. And then there are products like screen readers and screen magnifiers, which allow you to utilize kind of off-the-shelf software. It is one or other of those approaches the right way to go, do you think?
You know, that's kind of a thing that we were looking at maybe 7 years ago, when basically we came out with, you know, self-voicing programs. And they're good because they're very accurate. As far as anything that Windows or Apple will ever offer, I don't think it will be as good as what someone who specializes in that program. I mean, you know, you can find all kinds of generic word processors out there, but, you know, for, I mean, the dedication that the companies put into that is, I mean, it's super. And I'm not going to go into, you know, the different screen readers or pick on one or the other. But on the other hand, you have programs, for instance, like Scan and Read Pro or Text Cloner, that are actually self-voicing programs. There's different levels, and they are a lot cheaper, and they also work, you know, with your screen reader. But, you know, you either, you know, need magnification or you need a screen reader. And I just, you know, some of the little programs are pretty cool and they work. So you really have to look at what the individual needs or what they can afford. I always say, if you can afford both, have, you know, JAWS and WindowEyes. For instance, OpenBook, Kurzweil, that, you know, they're great programs. Most people don't use those features, but there are, you know, programs for $139 or $200 that do just as good a job. I think competition is good in the adaptive technology business. And if we hadn't had it, I don't think we'd be where we're at now.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. Let's change the subject for a minute and talk about something that I know you're pretty passionate about. Last year, or in fact 2 years ago now, the Florida Council of the Blind began to send letters to state agencies and the governor and the attorney general, in fact, all concerned about the fact that there were blind people who were losing their jobs because of the introduction to state agencies of programs that were inaccessible. And indeed, there was, or appeared to be, a pretty substantial portion of the state's website that was supposed to be available to all the citizens of Florida that seemed to be inaccessible. And while you didn't get appointed to one of the committees, you were kind of Florida Council of the Blind's watchdog as a task force that we were probably mostly responsible for getting created, that was appointed by the governor, discussed this issue, and then arrived at some conclusions that led eventually to some legislation. Tell us a little bit about what we gained and what we lost and where we still need to go, and maybe reflect a little bit on the degree to which the involvement of consumers made a difference in Florida.
I did, you know, follow the task force for all their meetings, and I think as far as the group, they did a wonderful job. And just when you deal with politicians, it starts out one way, it ends another way. Basically, what we got in Florida was what we call the AEIT bill, which basically said any systems implemented after a certain date had to be accessible, and any that were updated beyond that point had to be accessible. And all in all, that sounds good, but the problem that we ran into, and the people that, you know, were disabled or using the older systems that weren't accessible, were already employed by the state and in some cases lost their jobs. And we basically, it was really an honor to see the effort of the people and the goals that, you know, that they had and that they set. And there were some pretty heated arguments, because I think in government, you know, things are a little different. You know, some things are controlled by county, some by state. So you're just not going to flip a magic switch and make everything accessible. One of the things that I seen, and I think that the reason we didn't get everything that we wanted, is because nobody could put a price tag on it. And many of the, you know, meetings that I went to, I tried to express the importance of, you know, making it comply with Microsoft standards, as far as the internet, with the WC3 standards. And I think, you know, one of our problems was that nobody could actually give a price to fix what was not accessible, and that fell outside of those guidelines. So what we're trying to do now, we have a thing in Florida, a group of senators and representatives that have formed what they call the Vision Caucus, and they're basically interested in vision issues. And I think right now there's 23 people on the team, and we're going to try to go back to them and, you know, work with them to go back and retrofit, because, you know, we have people that have had jobs that have probably worked with systems that weren't accessible, but the more they change them, the, you know, less inaccessible that they become. So it's, you know, when you start trying to get things changed and you deal with politicians, there's all types of deals, and, you know, that they make, and they'll shove one thing on one bill, and we sort of felt like we had the ultimate or the perfect bill, and basically didn't get everything that we wanted. But, you know, it's another year and another try. And I think we'll be stronger this time, and it'd be interesting to see, you know, from the others of you who are out there, if you've had any experience with that.
The Florida law uses the federal standard, which is Section 508, as well as you said, the W3C standards. Do you think that Section 508 is a pretty adequate way to go? And have you seen any significant changes that have occurred since July 1st came and went last year?
Well, and I would have preferred us to write our own standards that were equivalent to the 508, because that's what they implemented. So if they change, then our laws automatically change, and that was a big issue that was brought up in the task force. And to answer your other question, no, I haven't really seen a lot of changes, because when the bill was passed, there was no office established to enforce the bill.
And I think that's one of the problems that a lot of us as advocates see with the bill. The other thing is there was a fairly lengthy regulatory process that was gone through in order to gather evidence that was a little disrupted by the hurricane season last fall. But I haven't seen regulations actually come out for the implementation of this law, which would presumably create an authority for some enforcement. Have you seen regulations yet?
No, and in the original recommendation from the task force, they were supposed to establish what they called an AEIT office. And, of course, you know, there was some talk about ADOG doing it, which we were totally opposed for. But that part did not get passed. I mean, in essence, what they said is we're going to stop the ball from rolling now, but there's really no enforcement behind the bill.
The ADOG stands for the Americans with Disabilities Act Working Group, and it's a state agency that is supposed to have some oversight and provide direction to the state on the implementation of the ADA by various agencies within Florida. Just a couple more questions, Robert. As an entrepreneur, I asked you earlier if you found it difficult to compete with the big boys for business. How can a small business person actually get enough large contracts to be able to get the margin? What are the kinds of techniques that you have to use? And how do you compete with direct selling from the companies themselves?
Basically, we're a distributor with GW, and each company that we deal with, we have different contractual agreements. We have two representatives in Florida and several other outlets that we sell through. And the adaptive technology, you're going to get paid a commission for a sale. You're getting paid, you know, to find the sale. And, you know, that can be as much as you want to do. I'll take on, you know, resellers anywhere, because if they're selling, I'm selling. And we, like I said, we have different relationships with different companies. You know, one product you may make 10%, on one you may make 25%. Pretty much what I ask is, you know, that the people know the product. Because if you're getting paid a commission, you got to, you know, provide some level of tech support. So I pretty much, most of the people that, you know, we have as resellers, I pretty much demand that they know the products and they don't have to know all of them or carry all of them. I mean, you know, it's my choice of, you know, which products I think are the best and which ones I want to push. I look for people who are visually impaired that really want to get motivated and get out there and sell the product. And it's not bad money if you get out there and beat the bushes.
Do you have a website and an email address that you might want to share with folks so they can take a look at who you are?
Our web address is easytalkcomputers.com. Just spelled straight out easytalkcomputers.com. And our email address is easytalk@earthlink.net.
Let's open it up and see if people have some specific questions or maybe even some issues. What do other people think that the ideal dealer ought to be? Do people think that there are some issues that we haven't asked Robert about that we ought to have? So let's open it up. Let's have the first question for Robert. And remember to tell us who you are and where you are.
Hello, this is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. It's an interesting program tonight. Paul mentioned something about the local dealer and things like that. But I think that with technology being what it is today, and the internet and phone and everything, no matter where you are, it seems like you can. It's almost you're local. You know, you can get to know the people that you're dealing with when you're trying to buy a product either online or by phone. It seems like you can become closely acquainted with the person that you're trying to buy from. At least I would think.
Well, I think a lot of people like that. And most of my customers, most of them, when they call, I know who they are. And you just, you know, generally I will take calls till 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night. And if you're out there selling adaptive technology, you got to give something that somebody else is not. And that's kind of what we look for. And you know, as far as GW Micro, they're just a wonderful company to work with. I know all the people on a first name basis. I know what they do, and it's such a refreshing thing, and they're really growing a lot. They're having a little few stress pains right now with the new release of, you know, the products that they have as far as the SenseView, the Braille Sense, and the new release of WindowEyes. And we're having a lot of people that are WindowEyes is really picking up in popularity now, and they've been a great company, and I think you need to look for that in a dealer. If you like the Freedom products, you need to find a dealer that's, you know, good, dedicated, because the support and, you know, just the sharing, and, you know, maybe I do one thing on the computer and you do something else, to have a dealer, or even to, you know, get a reference to someone that can help you do what you want to, is worth a lot. And, you know, if you're in the right spot, most people will do that pretty easily.
Another question for Robert.
Brian here from the Boston area. I've been in access technology for 20-some-odd years. And one of the things we were talking about 20 years ago, we're still talking today, and that's what is a reasonable price point for access technology. Is there anything that you think we can do to help drive down the cost of access technology to an area where it's affordable for end users to purchase and not have such a high dependency on the rehab system and the special ed system to provide us with access technology?
Ryan, that's a tough one. You know, there are other products that are, you know, lower cost. I'm kind of a guy that you get what you pay for, and, you know, probably if sighted people start using it, certainly the, you know, cost is going to come down. But there again, it's like, you know, do you want Microsoft money or, you know, QuickBooks Pro? You know, what do you want your product to do? A screen reader is probably the most complicated software on the market. You can talk your CAD stuff and, you know, your big data stuff, but, I mean, really, it is a very complicated program, and there's not too many people out there that know how to write a screen reader. So I think, you know, for your third party or your dedicated screen readers, I don't think you're going to see the prices drop unless something really freaky happens that, you know, sighted people are using them, or, you know, if something happens where you can talk to the computer and it just, you know, by zap gives you something where it's used on volume. I don't think so. And as far as the prices, I don't think screen readers or magnification programs are overpriced. Some of the hardware, yes, probably. And I think you will probably see some of that come down in time. And as competition goes in that market, you know, and we talk about competition with screen readers, that's nothing compared to the competition with note takers. That is a pretty weird market.
One of the questions, or, well, I guess, let me approach this in a slightly different way. I would argue, and I think most historians of access technology would argue, that the most important event in revolutionizing access technology was the arrival of Arkenstone, which drove the cost of scanning programs for the blind way down. And one wonders whether the arrival of another screen reader on the scene that's actually pretty competitive would be able to do that, were somebody to actually offer that program at a lower price. And one of the things that people keep talking about is that Dolphin may represent an option in that regard. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I looked at that screen reader quite a while back and kind of have, you know, sort of kept up to where it's at now. But it's kind of like, you know, is somebody going to knock out Microsoft when, you know, certain companies have an edge on the market? And then, I'm going to be good, Paul. Not going to go into this. Marketing is the whole thing that's important about a screen reader. And Freedom, or even TED before Freedom, did a very good job on that. Whether it's a better product or not, that's debatable. So it's, you know, marketing is the whole thing there. And it's just like me and my business, or anybody, it's, you know, how you are, what kind of company you are, what reputation you have. So, and I've been wrong before, but I think that, you know, we have the toehold in the screen reader market. It would be hard for, you know, Freedom Box, or the company that Mike Calvo's with, they're trying hard, but, you know, they have to go through the hoops just like Freedom or GW did.
Anicio Correa just put up a text message that says that Dolphin did dominate in Europe, but even now they're being overtaken in Europe by Jaws and no longer have the market share that they used to in Europe. So essentially, you would say that we're really now down to two screen readers in the ballgame, and that would be Jaws and Window Eyes. And it's ultimately going to come down to those two big boys kind of fighting it out for dominance in the system.
Well, you know, there was another company out there, I think it's Slimware. There was a guy named Dave. You know the program I'm talking about. I've heard a little bit about that. I thought that one was dead. So there are a few of them out there. And, you know, it's sort of like Larry with ASAP and then his ASAW. He was good at a point, but, basically there's to me, there's two players out there.
Let's talk for a moment about the Mac computers. Did they have a role to play in access technology? Is the Mac going to become a part of this equation?
Well, you know, I bought a Mac Mini and I played around with it, and to me it just didn't sit. I think that Mac wanted to get back in on the government contracts, and when Outspoken quit producing their product, they had to come up with something. So, and I know it's changed, and I know that your wife is playing with it quite a bit, and I've seen actually some people that are running Window Eyes on a Mac because of the cross platform stuff. It has potential, and maybe a little more than Narrator in Windows XP, which actually I hear there's going to be some pretty cool changes about that with Vista, and that might be something we want to talk about too. But I don't know, I tried the Mac thing, and I'm not there yet.
I think the Mac screen reader voiceover is pretty much in its infancy. There are a lot of people who are talking about the next major release of software with the Mac Leopard incorporating some really major changes to VoiceOver, including a whole new suite of voices, including a lot more commands, including a much more intuitive interface and a range of other things. So I guess my feeling is that it makes sense. But one of the things that at least is intriguing about the Mac is the model that they've followed was not to create a third-party market for screen reader development, but instead to build the screen reader right into their operating system. Does this say anything to Microsoft, do you think? Is Microsoft going to be under pressure over the next few years to do the same thing with Windows?
Well, I think Microsoft has actually gone a step further by working with the screen developers and giving them the tools to get into the operating system, because, Microsoft feels like they are the experts. And when you've got a third-party screen reader involved, there's money out there for them to make. What is Apple getting out of it? So I think it's only going to be so good.
Well, let's talk for a minute about Vista. Again, the history of access technology has seemed to be that a new operating system comes out, and as companies transition into that new operating system, job after job for blind people is lost, because the access technology field is 6 months or a year behind in making software available that in fact makes the new operating system truly usable by folks who are blind or visually impaired. Do you see some major problems coming up with Vista? Do you think we're going to have the same kind of history with Vista that we've had with other operating systems, or is it going to be different this time?
I'm not actually running a Vista machine right now. I have been following the beta list. I'm a beta tester for DW, and I have purchased a machine that will be upgraded to Vista. It was part of the deal. I don't think people are going to rush out. You're going to have some people that are going to try it. I can tell you that when Vista is released, when you can buy it, there will be a version of Window Eyes that will run on that. Now, how you do that and what you have to go through is probably going to get a little bit better as you know, things happen. This will be the first time when a new operating system has been released that there is a screen reader for it. As far as what Freedom's doing, I don't know. I know that, you know, all the demos and stuff that Microsoft's been doing, they are using Windows Eyes, and there has been some pretty nasty stuff, and there's some pretty, you know, I won't say big problems, but a lot of cleanup stuff that needs to be done. But it is a different operating system or a different interface than we're used to. In 2007 and in Vista, they're using now what they call ribbons, which is kind of confusing, but actually, once you get used to them, they're pretty cool. I don't know if any of you are using the new version of Media Player, but it's pretty much the way the arrow keys work and you branch out things is pretty much probably in 2 years what everybody will be using.
May I ask, what is meant by ribbons? I mean, how is that supposed to work?
Well, basically the way they work, instead of, you know, like when you go to a menu bar, you hit the Alt key and you use left and right arrow to move on the menu bar. You use up and down arrow, and then your right arrow or your left arrow branches out something or closes it. And that's basically what, from what I can tell, is what they're calling a ribbon system. A lot of the applications, if features aren't available, they're not even on the menu.
It's going to be interesting times. It is encouraging to know that one company is already claiming that they will have a software product that will actually be totally usable. And I think you're talking about Windows Media Player 11. Is that right, Robert?
Yeah, and it. And you can go in there and set it for classic to make it work the way it used to, but play around with it in its, you know, normal state. It's actually pretty cool.
Another question for Robert.
Brian here again. Continuing with this issue of operating systems and the cost of access technology and development and the like, have you done any exploration into Linux as an operating system and Orca as a screen reader?
No.
Well, you know, one of the things I've been just struggling with personally has been the cost of access technology. I'm really concerned that for an individual to get access to a desktop PC that's being advertised on television or radio or whatever, you've got to virtually double your investment over what you can buy it for. While those with vision can take it home, plug it in, and point and click their way into some level of computer literacy. So I'm looking forward to the day when we can use a open source operating system like Linux, with an open source screen reader like Orca, with an open source office suite like OpenOffice, to allow individuals not to have to double the cost of a PC to get to the point of a reasonable level of access at a reasonably professional level in terms of the applications and the like. I know that at CSUN there's going to be a number of presentations on Orca and the whole open source model of things, which by its very nature will keep down the cost of access technology. So it's just something for us all to keep in mind as we talk about the future of technology. I agree that probably Microsoft will continue to be the 500-pound gorilla or whatever in the room. But it may mean that individuals can choose to buy a computer for home use at a price that overall isn't going to require a second mortgage.
I know where you're going, Brian, but to do, you know, what you're talking about with Linux and Orca with the open source, you have to have somebody that's relatively pretty knowledgeable technically, and most of the people that need the technology aren't there. And that's probably why I, you know, say the Microsoft and the third-party screen readers are the best way to go, because they are relatively easy. And we deal with a lot of, you know, tech support, people on different levels. And, you know, if you got a friend that can do all that for you, that's fine. But the average person is not going to do that. And because of the low cost, or, you know, the nature of the way it's done, it's not going to happen a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Linux has certainly been around for a while, and it hasn't taken the blindness community by storm. And interestingly enough, it seems, anyway, that the blind people who have gone to Linux are the people who actually have the expertise to be good JAWS or Windows Eyes or Mac users. And they've chosen to go to Linux because they're comfortable facing what for other people seem to be the technical challenges of going back to a command line operating system. One of the things that surprises me is that more blind people haven't gone to it, in that it looks much more like a DOS interface than it does like a Windows interface.
Well, gentlemen, let me drop down the gauntlet and say, let's have this conversation again in 2 to 3 years and see if, in fact, we don't have a more significant competition going between Linux and open source versus Windows whatever version and third-party developer high-price product. I will tell you that if I were giving advice this day for an individual to have professional-level access to a PC, there's no doubt in my mind that I wouldn't be talking to Orca and Linux. But I've seen so much development in the past 6 months to a year that I'll be surprised if we don't have something that's truly competitive. I've got another company who's been doing, just giving advice to. I don't want to make it sound as formal as consulting with, but giving advice to as they're developing, and they've created an entire suite of self-voicing applications running under Linux. They're running it on inexpensive laptops. You will be able to buy it either as is to put on your machine, or they'll configure a machine for you, and it adds to the cost of that machine $150.
Well, Paul was saying that he was amazed that more people haven't gotten into the command line products, or you know, the similar to DOS. Well, back when Windows started, people were using DOS and they were used to it, and we were concerned that things were going to be inaccessible to us because of the graphical user interface. But now that we're used to Windows, it might be hard, or as blind people, it might be hard to go to something else. I don't know. What do you gentlemen think?
Robert, why are blind people not jumping on the Linux bandwagon?
Well, I guess even to go back to the gentleman just before you, you know, I was a DOS person, and that's what I learned. And I found that it was easier for people to navigate Windows who didn't know DOS. And I was a diehard DOS person. I mean, I used to read PC World like clockwork, and if I got an issue that had something about Windows, I would throw it away. It's what you're trained on and what you're used to. You know, Brian, your expertise is much higher than most people, so the average person is not going to go down the road that you would. It's actually, to me, been easier to teach a person Windows who didn't know DOS. And I actually still do a lot of stuff in DOS. I'm a all command line person. Sometimes I have to think about what they are. But, man, when my computer screws up, thank God I know a little bit about the command line. And that will always be there. But, you know, that's a level above beginner and probably above intermediate. And most people don't have those skills. And it could change. You know, Brian, I think as drivers and software and hardware gets easier to deal with, with those operating systems, you might see some changes. And, you know, Red Hat and some of the different versions of Linux have definitely made changes and made it easier for people that are using adaptive technology. But, you know, most people are going to work in a situation where they're using standard Microsoft products or in-house applications. And just most of your software developers aren't making major applications that are getting attention for those operating systems.
Be interesting to have a debate and bring to this forum three individuals, one who's totally sold on Macintosh is the way to go, another that's totally sold on Windows is the way to go, and then third that's totally sold on Linux is the way to go, and present them with similar questions, each of them. Not so much like the dueling scanner days, but rather talk to us about the philosophy behind and the business model that supports that particular operating system and hardware base, etc. One other thing that interests me over time is that technology is, early on, everybody referred to technology and it was synonymous with the PC, and these days technology is virtually any gizmo you pick up that has a computer chip in it of some kind. So we've been talking about things like screen readers and scanners and the like. Does your company distribute any other types of technology? I noticed you mentioned the Olympus, but you aren't distributing that. Are you distributing any other kind and supporting any other types of technology?
Oh, we actually are working on agreement with them now, and we'll actually probably have some of the first ones that are available. And I kind of went out on the limb with that product because of what I read. But I would say in a week I should have 10 units in here. And you know, when you look at that and you're talking about bringing down the cost of technology, there's a good chance that this thing for, you know, depending on what it's sold for, in a range pretty much $299 to $250, will replace the Plex Talk. And we're talking about less than 3-ounce item with 1 gig of memory. And I'm sure there will be some updates. It's probably got some bugs. But that's what we do. You know, we study the product, figure out the workarounds, and we push it. You know, I'm just like everybody else out there. When I read about new technology, I have to try it. And we pretty much, you know, put it through the test here. But it's good to see something out there, because there are sighted people out there that are paying $300 for a good digital recorder. So it'll be a refreshing thing. It's like the microwave. The Nemo, I don't know if you are, you know, or Timo, I'm sorry for me with that, but it's actually pretty cool. It's not a complicated microwave, but you can go pick the thing up for $85. So in that respect, you're going to see technology come down. I just don't think you're going to see it with serious technology such as screen readers or magnification programs. I mean, you know, Windows has magnification capabilities, has some speech capabilities, but they're not what I call full-fledged. And some of the other screen readers, you're going to, you know, sort of see the same thing, and they'll get a little bit better, and, you know, it will change over time. But I think for your basic things, I don't think you're going to see technology go down. I think we're going to see a lot of cool things, and especially if sighted people start using the products or seeing a need for it to talk or be accessible in some way, volume is going to certainly bring the price down.
One of the questions that I want to explore is it harder today for people to make decisions about technology than it was, say, 5 or 7 years ago? It seems to me that there are a broader range of products that can do a range of different things. Would you agree with that, Robert? Are there more things out there? Is it tougher to make good decisions for a consumer?
Well, that kind of goes like, you know, do I wait till, you know, something better is going to be out? You know, there again, I think that's an individual preference. One thing about it, if you have a computer with the technology that you need, you can certainly get the information. You know, you buy something, you think you did your work and you did the best, and then, you know, 2 months later there's going to be something better. Well, none of us have control of that. It's just, you know, it's a fact of it. And it's amazing to me that, you know, people will tell me Window Eyes don't do this or they don't do that. And I show them and they freak out. They're like, how did you know that? You know, if you make the investment, spend the time to learn the product and to know it, because it's, you know, even the people that write the software, sometimes they have to go back and look at what it does. And most of the technology that we have, that you have now, you don't know the potential of it. You think about the price and you consider all the stuff that you don't know. A lot of work goes into that, so we're going to see a lot of cool things. And, you know, I can't sit here and, through a crystal ball, tell you what technology is going to be, but that's kind of where I'm at with that one.
One of the new developments that perhaps is beginning to overtake note takers is the emergence of the accessible PDA. I guess there are now 3 or 4 or 5 of them. Do you see blind people adopting PDAs more widely than they have, and do you see them replacing note takers?
As far as like a voice note taker, probably yes. Personally, I'm a Braille person, and I've got spoiled, so for me, it wouldn't happen. Probably the ones that aren't using Braille certainly go for the cheaper product. As far as usability, you know, a lot of the note takers out there are the PDAs. Don't have good typing keyboards. Of course, you can do Bluetooth. So I'd say, you know, the ones that aren't Braille, probably yes. the ones that are not?
We're still looking at the vast majority of access technology users as non-Braille users. Would you agree with that?
I always promote Braille, and I will, and I've seen the changes in it. But I'm sorry, and I really tick some people off when I say this, but if you're blind, you can't read and write Braille. According to the dictionary, you're illiterate.
Well, I'm not sure I disagree with that necessarily. We're still looking at statistics that suggest that 10% of the legally blind population are Braille readers at the outside. And I would suggest, based on my experience, that of that 10%, maybe 20% of that 10% are actually good Braille readers. We're dealing with an awful lot of blind people who haven't embraced Braille. And for them, do you think the PDA does really represent a good option, something that they really ought to look at rather than a note taker?
If they don't want to learn Braille, certainly. But a lot of the note takers out there now are actually devices that can teach you Braille or even be a communication device for a deaf-blind person. When you take visual displays or LCDs, a Braille display and speech, you pretty much got a communication item. I mean, if you want to talk about something disappearing, that's a standalone Braille display on the computer. The note takers with Braille have pretty much taken that market. Me as a person that probably one of the biggest contracts I ever did was a contract for Alpha Braille displays. It was a big one, and we haven't sold one in probably a year and a half or 2 years. So, you know, the Braille note takers will be here for a while.
Brian here. I think that if you combine a powerful PDA, we're not talking about something you go down to Radio Shack and buy for $100 or something like that, but a pretty powerful PDA, and you combine it with one of the Bluetooth items that are being promoted right now by Humanware, where you have a Braille keyboard and a 12 to 20 cell Braille display communicating with that PDA by Bluetooth, that you've got yourself a Braille PDA in a pretty effective way. You also have something like, say, the BrailleNote PK, which has that same kind of feel about it, of certainly more than a note taker, perhaps less than a full-fledged PDA, but you still have that portability of a ultra-small PDA and refreshable Braille. That's a pretty good combination.
Well, one thing about it, too, the PDAs that we have out, you know, as far as the adaptive market, are much more powerful than what sighted people are dealing with. I mean, we're the leading edge on that.
Last question for you, Robert. Are there more devices that are out there now that enable blind people to read things like books than there used to be?
If you're going to read and you're using speech, I mean, scanners are, you know, $60-$70 now. And there are some, you know, software programs out there, even some of the commercial stuff. I'm an old Opticon user, and after all these years, that's the first thing I grab. You know, when you think about that product, it's really the most accessible. You can tell when there are columns. You can actually, you know, get a feel for the layout. And I can actually read almost as fast with an Opticon as I read Braille, and I'm a pretty fast Braille reader. And I think you're going to see some version of that, and there's some studies going on now and some experiments with actually maybe a device that would have a whole page of print. So, like, instead of reading Braille, you'd be filling print, whether it will vibrate or be raised in the shape of print. But actually with some skill, and that was a pretty cool technology that TSI came out with, and those units they're bulldogs, you know. Battery dies, take it out, they still work. I don't tote mine around anyway. But I go out and I get the mail out of the box. It's faster for me to put it on the table and read it, see what's from, sort it, than it is to do it on the scanner. I think you'll probably, you know, in the reading area, probably in the future, see some advancements on maybe some of the technology that originally started from the Opticon.
The Opticon is almost an extinct beast, and it's something that those of us who are Opticon users fear every day. But, Robert, we very much appreciate your being a part of Tuesday Topics this evening. I think we've covered a wide range of topics. I think we've demonstrated that to be in the access technology business takes a little bravery and a lot of caring. I think we've also learned tonight that working with access technology is something that can be a very rewarding experience, both in terms of public service and maybe in terms of the pocketbook a little bit too. So on behalf of Tuesday Topics, Robert, we'd like to thank you very much for your participation.
Yeah, I'd just like to thank all of you, and I think we're looking positive in technology. I think it's moving forward, and I think we'll see a lot of interesting things in the next year or two, and I like to try to get it out there, and I'll tell you if it's good or bad, you know, and I think we all have our opinions. We should be open-minded. I think, you know, one of the really things that has moved adaptive technology along is competition, and that's competition between products and dealers and distributors, you know. Get out there and, you know, find a good person, find a good deal, and I guess the most important thing is make sure you know what you want to do and try to find people, you know, that can help you, because it can be very rewarding.
Thank you for joining us tonight on Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday, 1 hour Universal Time. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. The first time you enter the chat room, the software will automatically download and install on your computer. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each show begins, those online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room service and how it works. An announcement promoting the topic to be discussed will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends list early each week. So we hope you will come and join us Tuesday each week when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. Again, the URL is ourplace.acbradio.org.